It sounds like Pete's got till about 1:45, and we'll probably take a break in between. I hope everybody enjoyed lunch. There is an email list here. I suppose you can either, well, I'll go ahead and pass it around, and Sean, our gracious host, will go ahead and email the recording of the talk yesterday and today to you, and we will go from there. Sounds like Pete stepped out for a minute. Lost him. Had him and lost him. Usually I take questions. I ran a staff meeting yesterday. It was so dry. Real dry. Anyway. Oh, they're not good jokes. They're not just not good jokes. A pirate walks into a bar, like, we don't want to do that. We want to keep it spiritual but light.
Tim, what's the hardest amends you've had to make?
Personally?
Yes.
I don't know how to quantify the word hard. What do you mean by hard?
Most awkward / difficult.
We'll talk about that after the meeting. And and with that, welcome Peter M.
Okay, Peter, recovered alcoholic.
Peter.
We've had lunch, so we have one more session. You might start to get, like, you might start meditating during the session after eating lunch. And if you need to get up and walk around, that's totally cool. Just don't text while we're talking. That's rude. But anything other than that, feel free. And it talks about entering the world of the spirit in step 10. And experientially, what's that feel like? Can we talk about that? As I clean up amends, meaning I'm making amends, I'm seeking out people. And we can go forwards through the steps and we can go backwards through the steps. Where I stop making amends, I'm not praying, I'm not meditating, I have a sponsor in name only. I have an 8-step list that's never been fixed. I made a few amends, like the effect produced by it, and then I go tell everyone I don't do anything else. Defects of character starting to show up in the droves. I justify, minimize, and rationalize them away, because it is me after all, and I'm a star. I'm not discussing anything with anyone as far as turning it over. I haven't. I'm self will run riot, but I don't think so. I forget unmanageability is an internal condition, not external. I justify everything I do that's not spiritual and make it spiritual. Insane thoughts are coming back. I'm acting out. I have a secret lives going on. And then I'm drunk. And we wonder how that happened. That could happen in a short time or a long time. Forgetting that although we might become spiritual beings and enlightened beings, we're always human beings and we're subject to break down. So I really need to work at this. And for me, turning it over, the longer I'm sober, I don't want to say it's more difficult, but when a book says we thought well before we did this in step 3, do you really want to do this? Because we acquire stuff and a reputation and possessions. And what if God took all of it? He reigns on the just and the unjust. And I think I'm going to find myself in some of those things. And Scripture says something like, if I try to find myself, I will lose it. But if I lose me, my life, for his sake, I will find it. And none of those things will I find God. I'm deluded into thinking I'm going to find God there. Something that says the truth will set you free. Well, it begs the question, what is the truth? I think last night I shared there are many truths in life. You got to pay taxes. If not, they come looking for you. Eventually. If you break the law, chances are you're going to go to jail. And one day God's going to call us home. You can't get out of that. We're all mortal. And if I don't eat, I will get sick and sicker and eventually just die. And if the body isn't hydrated, I will die. And there are a lot of truths in life. But there is one truth. The truth. And that's God. And when I look at it as know the truth and the truth will set you free, it makes perfect sense. Know God and God will set me free. Whatever conception of God is, with the understanding, whatever my conception of God is today, that might shift tomorrow. But it doesn't come from the mind because the mind is fickle. Scripture talks about how we waver. The way the ocean gets pushed around by the wind, I can go through life like that, double-minded. I want to be spiritual, but I want to be a player. I want to be loving, but I'm looking to fight all the time. And it goes on ad infinitum. And I need to be clear on who I'm serving and what lengths I'm willing to go to for that power. And my experience, and I'm no expert at this, obviously, but it seems to be the more I serve God and I'm committed to God, the less traffic I have in my head, and I travel light. When I'm in the head, when I'm in this failed system called the mind, it becomes my home group, my wife, my husband, my car. And anytime I put my before anything, there's a piece of me that's threatened that you might take what belongs to me. You might get something better than me, and I'm traveling heavy. When I understand everything's on loan, and the only thing my job is to do is seek him, I travel light. And I'll put all my weight in something that can be taken away in a second. But God can't be taken away. And that's consistent. It's constant. It's pristine. It's infallible. The head tells me different until I begin to experience the greatness and the glory of this power called God. I've had many people come up to me, and as I did, have lots of complaints about their church community. And as my sponsor would say, some people would complain, there's too much God in our program. And he says, that means they don't have a program. And so what I tell folks is, I'm not telling you to go back to your religious community, but fix the resentment with it. And then decide. Be on an even playing field, not one that's stacked, that the deck is stacked. We have preconceived ideas already. I sponsored a guy who had a horrible experience in his parish with some of the men of the cloth. Horrific. And I said to him, you don't need to go back. I'm not telling you to do that. But you got a resentment that is smoldering. Who's paying the band? You can't stay sober. And he finally got clear on that. And he's still sober. So what price am I willing to pay for freedom? Any price. Because I paid any price out there, thinking that somewhere in that whiskey bottle, I was going to catch fire, and I did. And somewhere in that whiskey bottle, or those pills, I was going to find myself and be content and whole and at one, and I did. But it always ran out. And then at the end, it didn't even work anymore. I was drinking just to survive, just to breathe. Because when you're far gone with alcoholism or drug addiction, you're not, as we used to say, getting off. You just, I don't want to be sick, and for the dopamines and for the alky, I got the shakes. I got to stop. I got to get well. A couple of drinks and I'll be okay, and then I can figure life out. The world of the spirit is completely different. What it tells me in step 10, it says this thought, the thought they're talking about. Is the ninth step promises they'll always materialize if I work for them? We'll begin to look at life differently. You know, talked about fear of finance insecurity will leave us. What I have found with that is, because I've been in some rough shape over the years with money flow. God has kept money just enough with me. I've never been rich. I don't even identify with rich. And where I live, there's a lot of rich going on. You know, where I live, I mean, if you go to a restaurant, there's four Rolls Royces parked in front of the restaurant. It's like common. How do you even attempt to get there? World of the spirit is a little different. Whatever I have is okay. And I'm not hooking into, I need that to be okay. And with financial insecurity leaving us, it's not that I don't care about money and security and taking care of Marion and maybe taking care of my brothers as I get older and making sure my loved ones are okay and that I can, if you will, grow old gracefully. and having that nest egg, they call it. Well, not everyone's going to have that. That's a reality, especially nowadays. But there's something where it's not haunting me. So I've had pockets full of money, and there were times where I don't know how I'm going to pay my rent. But what it's coupled with is what I was sharing about earlier, an undercurrent of, I'm going to be okay. My sponsor once told me, are you going to die over this? No. Are you going to get drunk over it? No. Are you going to go to jail over it? No. So you're having a great day. Yeah. Because sometimes that's what it comes down to. I remember one time my sponsor, Mark, called me. He used to call me really early in the morning. And when I found out later on, he just finished meditating and was all juiced up. And he would call me really excited. And he used to call me Money. He says, Money, how's it going? What's shaking? And I says, I'm hanging in there. And he read me the Riot Act. This is like 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm getting hollered up by my sponsors. You're hanging in there. Hanging in there. You got the grace of God. You're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You got the 12 steps. How could you be hanging in there? I never said that to him again. And he would say things to me like, what are you doing? He's Money, what are you doing about the dash? 6 o'clock in the morning, I have no clue where he's going with this. Where are we going with this at 6 o'clock in the morning? What do I do about the dash? What are you doing about the dash? What are you doing about the dash? I said, Mark, I don't know what this dash is. He says, if you go to a cemetery, there's a headstone. There's a date God brought you here and a day God takes you home. In the middle is a 2-inch dash. That's your life. We're here but a vapor. And we're out. What are you doing about the dash? Squandering hours that may have been worthwhile, nursing resentments, worried about fear, how much money is in the account? He says, when you're lying on your bed and you're about to take your last breath, are you going to wish you had more money and spent more time at the office or perhaps more time with your family and loved ones? Because I keep saying tomorrow, 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 I'll get to it. Tomorrow, I'll get in shape. Tomorrow, I'll do the steps. Tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow. And then one day, tomorrow is today and it's too late. And the thing about waking up, and please, I don't want to sound like I'm some guy who's like awake and like I'm here to preach. Trust me, I got more cracks in this armor than you could imagine. But I'm striving to get there. And my experiences don't lie to me. The thing about being awake, that stuff out there is still happening. The head is still talking. But my attachments to that has changed. There's days where I'm driving down where I get to my house, I drive down this block called Palmetto Park Road. And there's lots of little fancy restaurants and salons every 15 feet. You know, $6 million to get a haircut, these type of places. And you see Ferraris, Lamborghinis, and all these fancy cars. And I have a really nice car. But I'm driving by and I'm going, when am I going to get there? I'm 60. I should be a millionaire by now. Says who? Says the head. I went to work for this company when I first went to Florida, 2011 in January. I moved down to Florida. I went to work for this company. And my boss at the time was really generous. And I was driving a car that should have been put to sleep. It wasn't too good. It was a little rough. And I was kind of starting over. And I didn't have a lot of money. And I live in South Florida. The air conditioner's car wasn't working. So it was rough. My boss called me into the office. He says, we have to get rid of that car. He says, as a bonus, I'm going to get you a car. And he says to me, you look like a Lexus guy. I said, yeah, yeah, kind of. Yeah. So he said, I want you to do a little research. There's a JM Lexus. Oh, I just broke a tradition. We're on tape here. But this Lexus dealer, probably the biggest in South Florida, go there. Tell me what you want. I'll come down and meet you. And he gives me a brand new Lexus, ES350, all black. I was in paradise. I get the car, new car smell. I never drove a Lexus before. I mean, I could be driving a Rolls Royce at this point. I was afraid to drive it. I couldn't believe it. And something, I'm so like old school. It has the phone in the car. You could talk to people. This was like new age to me. I couldn't believe this was going on. And I'm driving this car, and I'm driving home, and it's around 5 o'clock, and I cannot believe, oh my God, I'm driving this brand new car. And I get to the bottom of Palmetto Park Road, which is this famous strip called A1A. And the sun is setting, and the water's right here, the beach. It's picturesque. It's a postcard. I got this brand new Lexus. I mean, all the drugs and alcohol could not replace brief, quote-unquote, moment, because it was ruined in 2 seconds. Because here's what happened. The head took over. I'm sitting at the light, and I hear this car roll up next to me, and I look over, and it's like a 20-year-old little knucklehead in one of these foreign, it was either Ferrari or Lamborghini, I don't know what it was, this blue car. And you know what they look like? They're intimidating. And I know that car goes for at least a buck and a quarter, at least $125,000. And he's like old enough or young enough to be my son. I look at him, he looks at me. He looks at me, I look at him. And I look at my car, and I'm going, you're driving an old man's car. You didn't even buy this car. Loser. You couldn't even afford to buy this car. Your boss had to give it to you because he took pity on you. This guy's probably made a 20-something. You should be like him. And the whole thing fell apart. The light turns green. I make a left, and I'm driving. It's about 2.5 miles to where I live. And suddenly we do this. What was that about? See, the thing about being awake, it registers. Where did I just, who was talking to me just now? It was the head. I went from, oh my God, thank you God for this gift, to this is nothing. A lack of gratitude in a second because the head took over. That's how quick the head will jump in. When I say the head, I'm talking about the mind. This deadly instrument. The mind is full of motives. Any alcoholic, including me, with the motive, we should be considered armed and dangerous, yeah? So I caught that, and I said, what was that? What just happened? And I was back in the saddle again and was enjoying my car. When I got home, I took the elevator. I said, Marion, hurry up, come down. And she met me at the elevator. We went downstairs, and we went for a drive in this brand new car. It was incredible. I was back in the saddle again. Can you believe this? That's what my head does, that quick. I did a thing called Gopher State Roundup a number of years ago. Now, they get about 7,000-8,000 people there. And I was a Saturday night speaker. And when I got done, people in AA, they stand and they applaud. And what we're losing in AA, and it's a shame it's happening, and the elders, we need to teach the youngins how we do this. Remember the line to thank the speaker? Those days seem to be gone, huh? We were told you wait in line and you thank the speaker, even if you don't like what they said. They took time out and kept their commitment. That's gone. Down in South Florida, all the halfway houses, no one's teaching them. Meetings, they leave during the Lord's Prayer. I can't believe this going on. So this Saturday night, the line went for about an hour. People being gracious enough to wait in line, say, thank you for speaking, thank you for speaking. I'm in the lobby, hey, thanks for the talk. Most people would feel pretty wonderful. We're heading out for dinner. I get to the doorways, I hear, hey, Pete. I turn around, some guy comes over, and he says, nice meeting you, thanks for the talk. And he says, that was interesting. That's an AA way to say he didn't like your talk. It's code, that was interesting. And then he followed up with saying, I never heard New Age AA before. Now he insulted me. Well, he insulted the ego. I don't remember what I said, but I'm going to tell you, that guy came to the restaurant with me that night in the head on the flight home, and for 2 days I'm going, I got to get back to Gopher State and change the whole talk for that one guy. That's what my head does. And the only thing that allows me to get out of that, the way I was sharing earlier, you can hear the defects coming, you can spot self-reliance, is that we'll get hooked. And then we'll go, who was just talking to me? I'll give you another quick story. I'm driving, I have a talk to do in Texas. And I'm driving down 95, in that same Lexus, by the way. And it's a beautiful summer morning in South Florida. Absolutely beautiful. Wasn't too muggy, was beautiful. And I rarely roll with the rooftop back. I usually have it really quiet. But it was just, I had it open, it was absolutely wonderful. And I'm so grateful that I get to do this. I get to travel a lot. And I know a bunch of cats down in Texas. So I was excited to see some old buds. And then the head took over. You're going to miss another beautiful weekend on the beach. Who are you anyway, Mr. AA? You travel? What is this stuff? You don't need Texas. It's landlocked. You got the beach. You're going to leave Marion behind again? What's wrong with you? Probably going to get delayed. You hate boarding anyway. It's like cattle call stuff. You're going to get the guy who's like six times too big to sit next to you. It's going to be really, why are you doing this? And I was miserable. And by the time you get off of this this exit, and then you make this big turn, and you head towards the airport, and again, I said, what was that? Who's talking to me? That's the head. And the only thing about being awake is we catch it. And when we're not awake, we don't. We ride that. I get to the airport, and there was a problem at the desk. I know where they check you in. People just on this woman trying to make arrangements for them. I don't know the story, but she was frantic and she had papers and she says, thank God it's Friday. And I realized she's talking to the same guy I was talking to in my car, same guy. That's what it does. It says step 10, we're supposed to continue to take personal inventory and set right any new mistakes as we go along, amends. Step 10 is about doing 4 through 9 every day. Write an inventory, discuss it, look at defects. In there I'll see, because an inventory list will show me who I need to make amends to. You know what's funny about making amends, whether it's here or back in step 4 and 5? We write an inventory, resentment Joe, he did this to me. Most of us and the planet out there, if we watch what's going on in the news right now with the left and the right, they're really clear on what the other person did. Most folks, even when we were out there, we were clear. When we were drunk or not, we knew who we were angry with and why. You just walk down the street and say, who are you angry with today? Well, my mother-in-law, my dad, my ex-wife, and why? That's as far as most folks go. What inventory does is push us into a dimension we never did before, to take a look at how this affected me, threatened me, interfered with my life, and then what did I do wrong? Where did I miss the mark? I don't want to say part because we're trying to disregard their part. But take a look at where I was self-dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. When we look at fourth step inventory questions 10 and 11, very, very similar. So we push this a little bit further. You see, what I did in this thing, still holding on to it. So we do 4 through 9 every day, but I was under the influence of my first sponsor, who was, you do the steps one time and one time only and live in 10, 11, and 12 forever. Now, if that's what's floating your boat, I'm not here to change you. But I will tell you from my own experience, I did that, and it didn't work after a while. I hit the wall, and thank God, God speaks through brick walls. When I'm done and I drop to my knees, I need help, then we hear his voice. Because I was doing all the things I was supposed to do, and I just couldn't get out of my own way. And when Mark showed up for Fellowship of the Spirit in New York, and he began sponsoring me, and we went through the work, for me, the second time, the wall came down. And that's why I've been on both sides of that. And for me, if someone asked me, go through the work at least once a year. I went through the work twice in 1 year. And then one time, I liked the effect produced by this, I called up Mark. And I wanted to go through the work again, the third time. And he said, I want you to call Don and tell him that. And I call up Don P., rest his soul. And he says, you're worshiping the methodology now. He says, a business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. That's what our book says. I need to take inventory. For me, being broke is spiritually broke, if you will, and I'm drunk. But a business which is always taking inventory and they're closed will go broke too because they're never open. He says, go talk about this experience. Go have the experience. Be with the experience. And then God will tell you it's time to go through the work again. Even if there's nothing terribly wrong, why not go through and clean it out again? Have you ever cleaned you paint your place. And you look at it, wow, this looks pretty good. I love the new color, new paint smell. Place looks nice and clean. Really great. And then 3 days later, you go, oh my God, I missed a spot there. It needs another coat there. You go back and you see the misses. Well, same thing with the work. I'll go through and say, this is pretty good. But in 6 months, I realized a couple of things I missed. And perhaps God wasn't willing to give that to me yet. So I found tremendous experiences in revisiting the work at least once a year, just to see what's there. Why not? I went to many Any Lengths to get loaded. And what they asked me to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, quite frankly, is getting a newborn baby holding in your arms and give them a peck on the cheek. Who doesn't like having a newborn in their arms? That's a whole nother thing. That's what they're asking me to do in AA compared to what I had to do to stay loaded. It says, we vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So my book is going to use words like vigorously, commenced, at once, next, meaning action. You know? I can go to the fitness center because I want to get in shape. And I joined this fitness center. And I go to Sports Authority and I buy all these new fitness clothes. I get the watch that tells me if my heart's beating. You know, these people got all loaded. They're all electronic. You know. And I get to the gym. It opens up at 6 a.m. I'm there at 5. It closes at 9. I'm there till 10. And while I'm there, I'm walking around. I'm shaking hands. And after like 90 days of doing this, I know everybody. They know me. I even know how the machines work. But I never, ever worked out. I'm just walking around thinking I'm looking good. And after 90 days, I gain weight and I'm in worse shape than when I started. And I say, don't work out. It doesn't work. And you join with me. And after 90 days, you look great. So now I hate you. I need to work out while I'm in here. I can do this. 90 and 90, by the way, appears nowhere in the first portion of the big book. Yeah. When AA started, there weren't even 90 meetings on the globe. They went to a meeting, if they had one in their town, and 12-stepped the rest of the week and prayed like crazy. They read scripture and they didn't apologize for it. Now we have to apologize for this. They didn't bring religion in after the traditions were started because it's an outside issue. But in some of our AA halls, there's too much God in AA. When did this start? When this whole thing is about God. It begins, middle, and end with God. The whole thing that we do here is take a drunk back to God. Their own understanding of it. It doesn't have to be religious, but that's what this is. We should be a pep rally for the power of God because we get to see lives get reborn and resurrected in this place. And those of us who have been around here a while will agree with me. Here comes Joe. He's been relapsing forever. He's a train wreck. Gets with a big book sponsor and in 6 months has 3 sponsees and is a productive member of his community again and never looks back. And he'll tell you of what this God has done for him. It seems to be a lot of self-reliance to stay sober nowadays rather than God-reliance. Well, they're not ready for God, they're new. So, if I get shot and get moved into an emergency room, is the doctor going to say you're not ready for surgery? Bleed a little longer. That's how preposterous that is when a youngin comes in and we say they're not ready for God or the 12 steps yet. Bill had about 6 months when he met Bob. Ebby didn't even have 90 days when he got Bill. And Bill and Bob went to see Bill Dotson. They didn't have double-digit sobriety. They were holding on for dear life. But they did not hold back the truth. And I'm very grateful. One of the things all my sponsors did, albeit I didn't like the information they were giving me and many times the delivery in which they gave it to me, but they weren't afraid of disturbing me and they weren't afraid of being made uncomfortable in themselves to give me the truth. Mickey Musset, my sponsor from Denver, no matter how uncomfortable it is for him to say it and for me to hear it, will deliver the truth. And I need that in a sponsor. I will call my sponsor and I'll give him something that I'm considering, thinking about, and he will tell me did you pray about this yet? I says, no. Then call me back after you pray, because it's a non-discussion right now. We turn all things to God. Your self-reliance just snuck in. He'll also tell me many times in the book, Peter, you realize you're mentally ill. That's what the book says. A force feeding of humility. I don't operate like people out there. I don't even want to anymore. Watch the news. Who wants to be a part of that mess? I'm wrong, but you're really wrong is how most folks go through life. If I wouldn't have done this if you didn't do that. At some point, this finger comes back. It says we vent to the world of the spirit, which everything has changed. Growth doesn't happen until I step into the unknown or the world of the spirit. You know, therapists might say you got to get out of your comfort zone. This is what they're talking about, to a place you've never experienced before. When you actually feel like there's no traction at the beginning. Up is down, down is up, left is right, right is left. Common sense becomes uncommon sense. I used to do things this way, but I can't even fathom doing that way anymore. I need to go to that person and make an amends. I said something that was just not right. Do you ever do this? Go to an office, a doctor's office perhaps, and you got to fill out some papers, and you give them the clipboard, and you innocently put the pen in your pocket or maybe your pocketbook, and you're headed for the elevator after the visit. You go, oh my God, I have their pen, and you got to go back and say, I took your pen, and they're like, what's wrong with you? You know, it's a 50-cent pen, because it's not mine. It's not mine. That pen just became a boulder on my back now. It's not an overnight matter. My next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. What am I doing to grow in understanding and effectiveness? You know, I'm either growing, the old timers would say, or going. It should continue for my lifetime, which the book is telling me this is going to be a lifetime commitment. It's not like a 90-day wonder and I put the car in neutral. I'm constantly moving. I continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When, not if, they crop up, I ask God at once to remove them. I don't tell God to remove them at once. I go to God at once. I'm not dictating to God, hey, take this now, but my first move is to God. We have immediately, folks, we call. If I can't get my sponsor, Mickey, I have a buddy of mine, Scott. Hey, you got time for an immediately? I need to share this inventory. Yeah, what do you got? We give each other spiritual consent. Because the head will get in there, resentment will hook us, a fear will hook us, something. So I need to discuss this regularly. And step 10 is what I'm doing throughout the day. And I'll share a quick story with you. I the business I'm in, I get a call from some folks. Bless you, who just opened their place. And he says, can you come by and say hello to some of us? We all know you. We just opened up. And that's not my thing. I don't like going there and schmoozing. And, you know, you talk about your product. I talk about mine. They have marketing people who do that. I don't like that. But I knew some of these guys. So out of respect, I went and wished them well. They just opened up. They were excited. This particular day, my finances were in rough shape. I just opened the business a couple of years ago. If you ever opened up a business, you know it's a huge financial sacrifice and commitment. All the money, you take enough, and everything goes back into the company to keep it breathing. And my finances were in rough shape this particular day, and I go to this place. And I walk in, and I'm not feeling too good about things, and I walk into this new place that looks like a palace. It was incredible how much money they put into this new place. And I walk in, and this guy comes out, Peter M., I can't believe you're here. Oh, my God, thank you so much for coming. I listened to all your CDs. You've helped me so much. Another guy says the same thing. A woman comes out and says the same thing. Now, most folks would feel pretty good about making this visit. You know, throwing roses at your feet. The owner comes out of the back and says, Peter Marinelli, you made it. He says, can I steal him from me? Takes me into his office. He says, I got to tell you, man, I've been listening to you forever. You saved my marriage. I want you to meet my wife. She came into the room, and her wedding ring was this big. It was ridiculous. She says, oh my God, she says, we listen to your stuff. We got new sponsors. I'm so glad you say thank you for what you did. Again, most folks would feel pretty good about this. But my head was in charge. I'm not feeling too good going in there because finances are not too good. And I'm looking at this palace and I'm sitting opposite his desk. And all I could see, I'm noticing what he's wearing. He's got a Canali jacket on. It's a very expensive jacket. He's got Ferragamo shoes and he's got a Rolex watch. And that's all I could see. I couldn't hear, thank you so much for helping us. I couldn't hear those guys in the lobby. All I paid attention to was the glitz of the place and what this guy was wearing. And I felt like I was slumped in his chair. I had to get out of there now. And I says, great meeting you, and so on. I did my pleasantries and got the hell out. I sat in my car and I began to weep. What class did I not attend on how to be rich and successful? I felt like an absolute loser. I own a business. I have a really nice car. I live in a really beautiful place. I have a wonderful, adoring woman in my life. Things, thank the good Lord, are okay, but not at that moment. I was a loser. And what I did was, we discussed it with someone immediately. I hit my phone, and I got Mickey on the phone, and I shared with him exactly what I was experiencing. And he says, this is alcoholism, perceptions about life. This is alcoholism. My sponsor always thanks me for calling him when I do these calls, too. He's great. He says, let's walk through an inventory, because he knew I didn't write anything because I was all upside down. He says, let's walk through an inventory. And he walked me through a four-column inventory. Now I'm starting to breathe. So what I want to share with you is, even though a situation may not change, just me reaching out to you for help, I got one leg out of the ditch already. In doing, we succeed. So I can breathe again. When we got done with the inventory, he says, I'm going to pray. And he prayed. He prayed a beautiful prayer to me over the phone. When I got home, I wrote the inventory he told me to write. And I called him that night. He said, how are you doing? I wasn't much better, but better than I was in the car. And it was just one of those days. I was a little black and blue. And the next day was a new day. But I got out of that ditch. Because I knew I had to reach out and hear another drunk, someone who was going to be objective and helpful and a calm, still voice. And many times I've called Mick and says, Mick, I just need to hear your voice. Someone who's grounded because right now life's eating my lunch. And that was one of those days. I don't want to ever exchange my life for this person's life, bless their heart. I don't. I'm very grateful what God has given me and what he's taken from me. But in that moment, I was wavering. And that's what the mind does. Why, in AA, some of us tell the newcomer, bring the body and the mind will follow, is beyond me. The last thing we want is a newcomer's mind showing up in the state of Nebraska. No offense to a newcomer, you don't want my mind showing up. We don't want the mind anywhere. Think the drink through, play the tape to the end, remember where you come from. Who's doing that? The mind. The same mind's going to get me drunk again. Sit back and think about, no, I'm not doing no thinking, zero thinking. I'm surrendering instead. And then God will say, now go this way. No, go that way. Or you'll hear someone talk and say, oh, I got it. And always give myself, be of service to someone else. We survived a certain trials and low spots ahead, my book says. Go help somebody. Marion sponsors Polly P. And every time Marion calls up with inventory, she says, now go help somebody. Go help somebody. Go help somebody. You have no sponsees to help? Get to a meeting early. Can I put out the chairs? What do you need done? I'll take out the trash. Just let me get into this because it gets me out of my own way. And I'm of service, which is what we do here. Service. That's our third legacy. 10-step promises. We cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. It's almost an afterthought. For by this time, sanity will have returned. They delivered the contract to us. We're asking for sanity, and two, we have it. I'll seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, I recoil from it as from a hot flame. I react sanely and normally, and we find that this has happened, watch this, automatically. I'll see that my new attitude towards liquor has been given to me without any thought or effort on my part. It just comes as the miracle of it. I'm not fighting it. I'm not avoiding temptation. I feel as though I've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I haven't even sworn the stuff off. Instead, the problem has been removed, and they go on to say it doesn't exist. So much for thinking the drink through. Remember the pain of yesterday. God is going to give me this gift, which, by the way, was always there. I'm looking at life from a spiritual place rather than a mind place. I was about 6 or 7 years old. And when I grew up in my town in Brooklyn, back then in the, let's see, that would put me at around 19, 10 years old was 69, so it was like 67. It was like the country. It was when neighbors would come out at night and have coffee with each other, and you would tell your neighbor, I'm going away for the weekend, watch my house. You could leave your bike in front of the house. As kids, we used to go to school on our own. It was just a different time. And my best friend was a guy named Joe Pesci, not the actor, same name. He was as crazy as the actor. He's gone home to the Lord now. But what we would do is we'd ride our bikes early in the morning. Joey would come into my driveway. And how we used to call people, used to holler, you know. And it would be like 6 o'clock in the morning, and Joey would be in his pajamas, and I'd have mine on. And we used to ride bikes. And back then, we had the, used to put baseball cards with clothespins. And remember those days? Newcomers are going, what are they talking about? But this is what we had to play with. And we would drive through the neighborhood. And when we were done, we'd come back to my house, and my mom would make us a little breakfast. And we did this all the time. Then my mom would leave like a quarter out, and we go to Max's candy store and get like an A cream or something like this or some bubble gum, and then come back and mom would make breakfast. It was the summertime. It was almost like a Norman Rockwell kind of moment in my life, except for one day. We're in Max's candy store, and we were doing our usual in our pajamas, barefoot, on the little bikes, and getting some candy, and going to go back to my house. My mom was about to make breakfast. And some older guy, maybe in his 30s, saw the two young kids in their pajamas and said something along the lines of, wow, look at these two kids in their pajamas riding bikes. He must have gotten a kick out of us. It was innocent. But what I heard, the ego woke up. What I heard was, look at these two idiots in pajamas riding a bike. Get a job already. It affected me so much, I never rode the bike like that with Joey again. Because he would come into my driveway and I learned how to lie. Let's go in the pool. My mom doesn't want me riding. Any excuse, because the ego woke up. Imagine doing that at like 40 years old and 50 years old, being a prey to this mind that limits what I can do and the freedom I can have. And step 10 promises me that this problem will be removed, but it all hinges on my spiritual fitness. If I'm spiritually fit, these 10 step promises will happen. Not cured, but recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, day at a time, and hopefully recovered from the other things one day at a time. Because that's how I live. Recovery is permanent, but we're in it one day at a time. When I first came to AA, he says, just do it a day at a time. He says, you're lying. This is forever. You're trying to bait me here. But that's just the way it is, depending on my spiritual fitness. And with step 11, it's about growing and understanding and effectiveness and enhancing this experience. Do I have a life of prayer? On awakening. Not after a carton of cigarettes, 6 Red Bulls, and social media. And then go, om. On awakening. Which means on awakening. Because we can get to, I want to get up, have some coffee, see if I get any likes on Facebook. I should go to the gym. I should paint the house, then I'll meditate and pray. When I was new, Vince D from New York, I was just getting sober. He already had 30 years at the time. And he says, tell me about your mornings. And I was honored that Vince Dowling was interested in my morning, this old time. And I says, well, you know, I wake up, make some coffee, read the newspaper. I was used to read the newspaper and a cup of coffee. Take a shower, pray, meditate, get dressed and go to work. He says, let me get this right. So you do about 3-4 things before you pray. He says, what's preventing you from getting drunk from on awakening till you get to prayer with those other activities? Because an idiot is running your life till you get to God, he said. The alcoholic you. And so I heard that. So on awakening, I open my eyes, I thank God for another day, then I go pray and meditate. I'm not saying I do it perfect, but I have a life of prayer and a life of meditation. And I will tell you, the life of meditation has been so fruitful, so encouraging, so enlightening, so insightful, has answered riddles in my life, has given me inspiration, inspired me. I have some notes I had here before. At home, I have a whole bunch of them. Not all of it's mine. A lot of it is. When I say mine, after meditation, I just thought of something, and I would write it down. And it's perfect. It's on point. And I realize it's just being fed. Because if we're clear, we can hear. And God's given that to us all the time. Anyone here on the 30 days? Yeah, God's talking to you. All the time. Anyone under 60 days here? Yeah, God's talking to you folks as well. Your God. You don't have to be 30 years sober to get that. When a baby pops out of mama, mama grabs and starts talking to him or her. Baby has no idea what's going on, but she's talking. Probably, like I see a lot of women, they talk to their baby while they're carrying it. He doesn't have to be 20 years old for mom to have the first conversation with him. God's talking to us all the time. All the time. Even when we're angry. All the time. I just need to pause and listen. That's why a book says when agitated or doubtful, as we're going through the day, we pause. I could be agitated and not be doubtful. I could be doubtful and not be agitated and be both. Pause. Okay, take a couple of beats. God, what's going on? What do I do? It doesn't mean I'm going to agree with it, but what do I do? So on awakening, I think about the 24 hours ahead. I consider my plans for the day. I ask God to direct my thinking. Divorce from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. In short, get out of the way. How can I practice love and tolerance when I'm in the way all the time? There's a motive to everything I'm saying and doing. You know when we say we're people pleasers? That couldn't be further from the truth. I'm not a people pleaser. I'm a me pleaser. I'm doing something for you so you see it and say, wow, Pete's a really good guy. You need some cash, I'll give you cash. I'm going to tell everyone, you know, I'd help this guy out. So I want a monument erected outside the meeting. Pete helped out Joe. There's no people pleasing. It's Peter pleasing. I have no good motives. But something happens in this awakening where we start to really give from the soul. It's altruistic. Think about what we do in AA. When you come into AA, they don't check you at the door. They don't ask what insurance policy you have. They don't ask for money to come in here. You don't even have to put a dollar in the basket. They suggest you do. But if you don't, you don't have to. You don't even have to use your real name in here. It's the most organized, chaotic place in the world, but it works. And everyone's an equal, as God would see it. We have elder statesmen that we go to. But the real elder statesmen know they're just a spoke in a wheel like the newcomer is. See, what happens is, my experience has shown me, we're in this big pool of water, yeah? And at the deep end are the guys and the women who know how to swim, like the lifeguard people. They're in the 15 feet of water playing around. And when I got here, was in the kiddie pool. The little short end of the water, it's like 1 foot high and a million floats around me. But we're in the same water. And there might be a day where that old timer is going to need a newcomer to swim across and help him. And there might be a day where I got to call on the old timer to swim across to the kiddie pool and help me. We're all in the same water. It's a room full of broken toys, Alcoholics Anonymous. We're the toys no one wants to play with. It's missing parts. So we chop wood, carry water. We chop wood, carry water. We chop wood, carry water. And then we find God carries his water in broken pots, and that's us. It doesn't make sense to the head, but in the world of the spirit, it makes perfect sense. The chop wood, carry water. We're not doing it for any kind of applause, any kind of spotlight, any kind of popularity. We're doing it for the glory of God, and that's it. We'll go plow the field all day long because it's what we're supposed to do. And there's some contentment and fulfillment in working for him rather than being a slave to the head. And I'm doing it when no one's looking. I'm doing it when no one's around because it's what's right. I've been given integrity in Alcoholics. We have been given integrity in Alcoholics Anonymous and dignity and grace. Marion always says, the woman she sponsors, that they need to be, she wants them to become women of grace and dignity. That applies to the men as well. Where the new girl walks in and we walk her over to the old timers table with all the old timers, the women in there with the 20 years and better, and pass her off to them so the wolves stay away. But maybe there was a time where I'll sponsor you. Yeah. That's what we do. We feel safe in AA in most places. It's really living in the world of the spirit. When I retire at night, there's some inventory, some questions. Was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, afraid? Sins of omission, did I keep something to myself that no one's going to find out? Remember in step 5, they talked about, are we clear here? The same thing again, 4, 10, and 11. There's something in the repetition of this stuff, the discipline, there's freedom. It tells me don't drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection because it's going to make me not useful to other people. The ego drifts into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. Oh my God, how could I have thought like this? I can't believe I did this. It doesn't mean just kind of roll away from it. Take a look at what just happened, but don't bore people that you fell short because part of being an alcoholic and human is we're going to fall short on our best days. We go back to God for forgiveness and we help other people and get back in the saddle and keep riding. The meditation in the morning, when I first started meditation, a woman in AA who belonged to an ashram for a long time was like really like just really gifted. And she taught me a lot about meditation. And she put me on a timer for 2 minutes the first time. 2 minutes felt like 2 hours. And what I quickly touched was how loud my head is when I try to go quiet. There's a lot of stuff going on up there. I'd rather not do it. And I have to be in a lot of places all of a sudden. I got to do stuff. 2 minutes became 3. She put me on to 4 and then to 5 and 6 and 7. And somewhere around 8 minutes, I didn't need a timer anymore. It was like the soul was looking forward to the time in meditation. It was getting fed. And over the years, that has evolved. My prayer has evolved. Meditation has evolved. I got, one point, attached to reading in the morning. 24 hours a day, daily reflection, meditation for men, upper room, this book, that book. If I missed a book, I'd make a U-turn, go home and read that page, then go to work. And I had to read this and read that, get everything, you know. Oh my God, I'm worshiping the stuff. And what we can do at meditation is we can have the sage, the candles, the gongs, the CDs. We got all this stuff with burning lights. It looks like this orchestra is playing this light show. And the only thing that's meditating is that stuff because I'm watching it. Oh, wrong song. You know, I got to get more sage. That candle's not burning right. What an experience this is. And I'm doing all this stuff. So I don't do anything in the morning until I'm done with prayer and meditation. I don't read anything. Occasionally I'm inspired to read something, but I don't read as a general practice. I have a meditation mat and what I call like a little altar at home. And I work with some prayers, and I go into sacred silence to hear, and the darkness to see. And if I'm clear, I can hear. And there's days in meditation where it's noisy. There's days in meditation I can't get centered. That's okay. Just come back to breath, come back to breath, come back to breath, come back to breath. And there's days where I'm taken. But I'm in there plowing the field, what I call the chopping wood and carrying water. And this day where God says the ground's fertile enough here. But I don't know what that day's going to be. And they're always enlightening and life-changing. God has given me some of those experiences. And what am I supposed to do with all of this? Pass it on for fun and for free. Intensive work with other alcoholics ensures immunity from drinking. What an arrogant statement. And what a tremendous promise. Our book says intensive work with other alcoholics. That means you come to my house, we open up the book, and we begin. An hour, 2 hours today, meet you in a couple of days, we'll do it again. You're bringing me inventory, that kind of stuff. Not here's my number, I'll meet you at a meeting. Intensive work. Ensures immunity from drinking. Incredible. I go work with others. And I'll just tell you a bit about my sponsorship. I come from a lineage where we need spiritual consent. Meaning, some folks do this, and if this works, great. But we don't go, hey, you need a sponsor, I'm it. Some people do that, and there's been success with that. We need spiritual consent, which means you got to ask. Because if you don't ask, and I volunteer, you might say, hey, I never asked you in the first place. But you asked me. I didn't solicit you. You said, Pete, can you sponsor me? So I'm going to give you everything I have. It's spiritual consent. And we begin. And what I do with the men I sponsor is what my sponsors do to me. We have call times. And places we're going to meet at a meeting. My first sponsor had me on Monday, Wednesday, and Saturdays at 10 a.m. 15-minute window. One time I called 20 after I got his voicemail. Answering machine. Remember the answering machines? He called me back a couple of days. I have a life too. And he says, if I was your drug dealer, you would have called me at 10 to 10, not 20 after. I got it. So I do that with the men I sponsor. They have call times. I call Mickey Monday nights at 7 p.m. You won't get me on the phone. Unless you text me, it's a 911. From 7 to quarter to 8, 7 to 8, 7 to 8:30, when he's done, we're done. And that phone call consists of me talking about inventory, talking about maybe scripture, talking about some concerns I have, whatever it might be. I'm the student, and he's the teacher. And I do that with, that's called discipline. Discipline to a spiritual life. And that's been working for me. All my sponsors have done that. If I happen to call them up and I'm unloading on them, they always said, where's the inventory? Or just going to dump on me, unless it's a 911, it's an immediately. Then they all work, okay, let's walk through this together. Because sometimes you're going to get hooked and you can't even pick up a pen. You're just upside down. I got to call my sponsor. I'm upside down, please help. And they'll walk you through that. And I speak for myself. I run things by my sponsor. I'm thinking about doing, I'm in the business I'm in, I'm leaving every 6 months. I'm done with it. Mick, it's coming on again. Why don't you go to God? And, you know, there's always an insight. There's always something that a sponsor will give you. Or perhaps it's tradition stuff. And one of the best things I got from Mickey, and there's been many, is him gently, with the firm hand, guiding me back to my religious community. And no longer having a part of my life that I could say I was a hypocrite at one point. And so we pass this on for fun and for free. What I want to, because I do have a plane to catch here, and I'm on a short leash here. We get spiritual books. Someone came up to me early, asked me about some books to read. And I said, don't read them. What I learned was work with them. You get to page 5 and you hit a spot that talks to you. Stop there. Sit with it. Take statements, flip them into questions. Meditate on it. So the book becomes who you be. It becomes internalized like this book, our big book. It's who you are now. Rather than just gaining more information and in 3 months you can't remember what you read. And in some books you'll get, or they'll be given to you, a lot of books were given to me, they're just not talking to the soul. It's like watching grass grow, it's dry. So I used to say, well, this book's not for me. And my sponsor, Mark, in his life says, no, you're just not there yet. So this one book I had, it was given to me, and it's like I'm going nowhere. I put it on my shelf, and you probably know what I'm talking about. Then one day that book's talking to you. It's like on the shelf going, read me. Psst, read me. And so I pick up this book. I'm alcoholic, which means I look at the pictures first and I read the ending, then I stop from the beginning. So I'm flipping through and squiggly writing. Joe and Charlie used to call it squiggly writing. And I see this. It was way in the back of the book. And I'm reading it. I remember getting very emotional. I said, oh my God, this book's been sitting on my nightstand forever, and this was in here. He is not talking about Alcoholics Anonymous, but if you hear it, he's talking exactly about Alcoholics Anonymous. And for me, this kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Talks about AA. I can't think of the right adjective, but this is AA for me. It says this: may I become at all times, both now and forever, a protector for those without protection, a guide for those who have lost their way, a ship for those with oceans to cross, a bridge for those with rivers to cross, a sanctuary for those in danger, a lamp for those without light, a place of refuge for those who lack shelter, and a servant to all in need. It's my Alcoholics Anonymous. Sam Shoemaker sits, stand by the door and wait. Many are dying to get in here, literally dying to get in here. And some are going to struggle to get in here. Some might not make it. But we stand by the door and wait. And some of them are right in our meeting too. And we offer friendship and fellowship to these folks the way it was offered to me. A day at a time, for fun and for free. And we don't sell anything in AA, but if we did, it would be the soul walk that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And over and over and over again, we get to see the blind see and the lame walk. Because when I got here, I was upside down. I was in serious trouble. And I walked into that Three Legacies meeting. I had my brother's clothes on. I needed a haircut. I was still underweight. And I looked, I thought I was looking pretty chic. They knew I was new. And they didn't say, oh, you can't come in here. This is a fancy meeting. We all have nice clothes on. They said, welcome. And they introduced me to people. For me, the most, and I speak for myself, to me, the most important commitment at any meeting, because I always volunteer for it, is the greeter at the door. I don't know who's walking in. I better be dressed for that commitment too. I can't look like I just came in off the street. Unless I'm a newcomer, and we get an old timer with a newcomer. Someone's family might be walking in. Maybe it's anniversary night. Someone may just coming into AA for the very first time and is petrified. Maybe a woman who's been abused by a lot of men and is a man standing at the door. I better go with God's heart and say welcome and direct them to the elders in the meeting. Because there's nothing like, you know, when you go to a restaurant and you know someone, hey, how's it going? Come on, sit down. You kind of feel the pressure of walking into a new place is off. What about walking in here? You know, everyone seems to be laughing. What are they laughing about? Welcome. I'm Peter. That's Joe. That's Frank. Come on over. We'll get you some coffee. And you sit him down with us. And he'll come back the next night. And we work tirelessly, and sometimes it's inconvenient. It's late at night, I don't want to take this call. I was living in Minnesota. I was new in recovery, and I'm crawling out of my skin. And there was a guy, Steve, out there who was helping me. I said, I can't call this guy. We didn't have cell phones, and you know, the old, and this phone gets to be 2 tons. I called. The first ring he picked up, he says, we just got back from something called midnight bowling. I thought, how lame is lame, midnight bowling. We just walked in the door. What's going on? And he walked me through that night. That's why I can never shut my phone off. When I get home at night, it's usually on my nightstand. And it's on. I don't even put buzzer because I won't hear it. Because somebody might be calling like I did to Steve and needs a drunk to talk to. How could I shut my phone off? Even if I'm on holiday somewhere, how could I shut my phone off? I can't. The Spirit won't allow me because somebody might be calling. It says, Pete, I'm going to drink. Can you help me? I need to be there because they were always there for me. For fun and for free. It's a great thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, for fun and for free. So if you're new, welcome. They used to tell me enough to drink again. Your head's going to want to drink, but you don't have to. And what we get here is a new life. We have to be a willing participant in it. If I went to a cop spot and I didn't know anybody, I'm copping. I'll make myself get in there. I come here. We're asking you to be a part of this. Because someone's going to be coming in about 30 days or 60 days who's going to need you to sponsor them. And you're going to be at the door saying, I can sponsor you. Yeah. Thank you all for listening. That's all I got. Peace.